everybody. Okay, so it's hard when we are continuing and there's a whole week in between, but it doesn't matter. So I apologize in advance. A little bit of repetition always ends up happening because just want to do a few things inside and whatever. Hopefully not too much repetition. But we're going on with our story. So our story, as we saw last week, it's amazing how everything is just as if it happening. It's all happening again now. But we are talking about the Jewish people. They are about to enter the land of Israel. That's what they're really anticipating very strongly. It's the end of the 40 years in the desert. And here they are with one, so to speak, one last war before they will enter the land of Israel. Then there will be more wars. But in our story, we're talking specifically about a war against a nation called Midian. Who asked last week? Was it you, Sylvia? Yes. Who's Midian? So I looked it up and I said, of course I should have known. I think you said, you actually suggested, and you were right, it was Avraham's, after he remarried Hagar, who was known as Keturah, so one of the children was Midian. So it's actually interesting, the sources. Yeah, so it's like quite, you know, they're interesting, and yet they didn't turn out so good afterwards. So quite amazing, yeah. So that was, thank you. When I said I had to check right away because otherwise I would forget. But yes, so that's one of the children that Avraham had afterwards with Keturah. Anyway, so here we are, and Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, as we saw last week, that you have to fight this nation, and only after, and not only, but when you conclude and are victorious in this war, then you can pass away. That was like you can be gathered unto your people, which we explained to mean that your neshama can go into Gan Eden, which showed us that this war is very much connected to Moshe Rabbeinu as a leader. In other words, it's dependent, the success of the war seems to have a connection to Moshe himself. That's what we have to see a little bit deeper, and also for Moshe himself, for his own completion of his own work in this world, it is important that he leads on some shape or form. I mean, as we saw last week, he didn't actually lead. He sort of led from behind the scenes, but nevertheless, he organized it. It was extremely important for his own mission to have this war while he was still alive. And only then does he attain the heights that his neshama needs to attain in this world, and he's able to pass away. So we didn't say what it represented very much spiritually. Today we'll touch on it, because there's a few more details in the story that we still have to see that we didn't see when they were fighting. So as we said, one of the big things, I want to do one or two things inside the Mefarshim. So if you look at, I have three booklets in front of you. So the booklet that has the Mefarshim, which of course doesn't have numbers, would be good. I'll find it and I'll show you. The one that looks like this. See that one? So yeah, that's right. The Hebrew one. I know. But don't worry, I'll translate. I won't read all inside. I'll translate. And then we're going to go to the English in a minute because we'll continue with the Psukim. But I just want to show you a few of the commentaries inside because they give us very nice understanding, a depth of understanding of what's really happening. Okay, so some of it we said, and I'll just do it quickly, and some we didn't. Sorry, I just want to find it in here. Okay, so the first one that I'd like to see is the Ramban, that's the first one on the top. And he tells us, and this we did say, so I'll just very quickly, tells us that really Moshe Rabbeinu, he led the Jewish people before they entered the land of Israel, as we know. Once they enter the land of Israel, who takes over is Yehoshua. And he's the one that's going to lead them on the wars in the land of Israel, as we know. But we have a fascinating thing that Hashem specifically wanted Moshe Rabbeinu to do this war and not Yehoshua. And as we said, we're going to see specifically there is a connection. Sorry, I don't know what's going on here. I'm sorry, I just have to scroll down till I get to it here. But there is a specific connection between Moshe and this, you know, this war kind of a thing. Okay, just wanted to see. All right, let's do the Bal HaTurim. So that's the second one. So it says, Elef Lamata, right? So as we said, he chose this very interesting war because it was 1,000 per Shevet, 1,000 per Shevet, which altogether comes out to 12,000. Wow, sorry about this. There's a lot of psukim, so until I get them. Okay. Okay, so he says like this, that when we're talking about 1,000, so he says, L'chol mata shnei alafim, because it says it twice, it means really there were 2,000, because it says 1,000 per shevet, 1,000 per shevet. And we did mention last week, why 2,000? Because the truth is that the amount of soldiers that actually went to war was only 12,000. This was a very miraculous war, because 12,000 is a very small army, especially compared to the nation of Midian, who also had other allies with them, had a lot of soldiers, and were even better trained soldiers, and nevertheless, we only send 12. But he says, even though it's only 12,000 at war, nevertheless, he says, Hare esrim va'arba alafim, holchu aleihem l'mechamas. Nevertheless, because it says double, it means that there is something to do with 24,000. Why? And why do we have to have 24,000? And in a minute we'll see what I mean by what did we do with 24,000. But he says, keneged esrim v'arba alafim sheipilu miYisrael. It corresponds to the 24,000 Jewish people that the Midianites actually ended up destroying. How did they destroy them? They didn't fight them and destroy them. Do you remember what they did? They had this whole plan and they sent out the girls and the Jewish people sinned. And then when the Jewish people sinned, both with immorality and idol worship, then Hashem sent a plague. And in that plague, 24,000 Jews died. So because 24,000 Jews died because of the Midianites, now they send out 24,000 to protect the Jewish people and to take revenge against the Midianites. So he says like this. Also, v'ha-pasuk, if you look at this pasuk, it begins with an aleph and it ends with an aleph. To tell us, and this is very beautiful, shekulam hoyu lahem leiv echad la'avihem shebashamayim. All of the soldiers, and it wasn't only soldiers, it was 12,000 soldiers and 12,000 men who went to support the soldiers. Different opinions, whether it be that they were there like watching the ammunition, doing the behind the scenes, the cooking, you know, all that kind of thing that soldiers need. So it could be that that was one thing. Another thing is maybe it was 12,000 combat soldiers and 12,000 who were davening behind the scenes for the soldiers designated specifically. So we say that they all went with one heart, all with one heart, with one focus, on their Father in heaven. And it's a very beautiful thing. We all know how that works. When we're united, we're much, much stronger. And it's just not just a matter of being united, but literally with one heart, feeling totally each one responsible and for the other. And I feel like we, unfortunately, in the hard way, we've come so much more together, which is a very powerful thing. As we know, there's nothing stronger than that. And then he says, Vayimsuru me'alfe Yisrael. Remember, we mentioned the pasuk that they were given over. The soldiers were sort of given over from amongst the Jewish people. And we mentioned the reason that they had to be given over is because they didn't want to volunteer, because they heard that through this war, Moshe will pass away. So they were hesitant because they didn't want Moshe to pass away. They wanted to delay it. And another opinion is Vayimsuru comes from the language Shemosru Atzmam al Kedushas Hashem l'Hatzolas Yisrael. That they literally had Mesiras Nefesh. You know, they gave up their, like the soldiers now, who are willing to go into battle knowing the danger that they are facing just to save the Jewish people. And this is something very strong that happened then, and we wish we didn't need it, but it's quite incredible when you see it. It's quite powerful to see that feeling that people, that these soldiers have, that are willing to put their life on the line just in order to protect and to save the Jewish people. And that's what was over there. That's why it uses that word. They literally gave over their life. You know, they were willing to give up their life if need be. And then he says an interesting thing that Vayishlach Oysam Moshe, right? Moshe Rabbeinu sent them. So Elef Lamata, right? The 1,000 for per tribe, Litzava for the army, and Pinchas. And he says, who didn't he choose? V'hanesiim loy shalachi mohem. He didn't choose all of the princes of the tribes. So remember, and we'll discuss it a little bit soon, but remember we said they didn't just choose the strongest men. I mean, obviously they chose strong men, but That wasn't the criteria. The main criteria was that these men had to be righteous men. So who would you imagine to be the most righteous of each tribe? Well, the prince of the tribe, who is the leader. Each tribe had somebody who was called the leader and represented the tribe. They would have been for sure the righteous. And yet we find that from the tribes, they didn't send the princes of each of the tribes. And why is that? This is such a beautiful thing. Kadesh la yispayesh shevet Shimon sheneherag nisiyai. All to protect the tribe of Shimon, who, when we mentioned the story with Midian originally, which tribe was it that were the most part of the sin? It was the tribe of Shimon. And whose prince went out to sin with the princess of Midian? It was the tribe of Shimon's prince. So in order not to shame the tribe of Shimon, we don't send the princes out. Because his prince was the chief sinner, so to speak, and led the rebellion. Very interesting who we're protecting. I think that's so incredible. Who are we worried about? Whose dignity? Not just, you know, good people. We're talking about the people who did the wrong thing. And nevertheless, we care not to embarrass them. So it's quite a powerful thing here. Okay, that's also coming through. And I think as we see, as it unfolds, because you can see from here, what is it that gives the Jewish people the strength to fight the war and to be victorious? Of course we have to make we have to do things naturally, but it's much, much more than that. With the Jewish people, it's much more. We know we're 14 million people in this massive world. The only way we exist is A, when we're united, when we go beyond ourselves, when we realize that our whole existence is supernatural, and we lead with a spiritual sense. That's why all these things are so important, meaning to say that the soldiers have to be of the highest caliber spiritually. Of course, they also have to be strong, but they must be of the highest caliber spiritually, because otherwise we don't stand a chance. And our behavior has to be that we have to be extra united and care about the dignity and stay away as much as possible from causing anybody to feel any shame, so to speak, anybody at all. So it's amazing how important that is, and especially when they're going to war. Why? It's a fascinating thing. Why war? Because when you're in a time of war, you're in danger. When you're in a time of danger, obviously you're more vulnerable to the spiritual forces who will come and say, oh, they don't really deserve a miracle. So that's why we have to act as best as we can, so to speak, so that we do deserve a miracle. But as you can see here, I think it's so incredible when we talk about the righteousness, which type of righteousness are we talking about? The caring about each other. That's the most important thing. That's the top of the list. Okay, so it's a powerful lesson in and of itself already, you see, coming through. Okay, so just a little bit more, we'll go here. It says, the Sfarnu explains that, let me just see. I'm not going to see, the Sfarnu doesn't say anything new. The Ramban also, we really did. Just want to see if there was anything extra. Yeah, we did the Ramban last time orally, and I just want to show you, if you go to the next page. Oh, one more thing that you don't have in front of you. I just want to tell you something very, this is something also. I think everything is so, it's like it could be now. So it says like this, the Medrash tells us something interesting. The Medrash says that when Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, remember we said that you should avenge the war from the Midianites, and the words Hashem uses, the avenge the honor of the Jewish people. And then when Moshe Rabbeinu repeats the command, he says, Hashem said to avenge the honor of Hashem. It was like very interesting. So who is it? The honor of the Jewish people or the honor of Hashem? Why does Moshe Rabbeinu change it? Why doesn't he say Hashem said to avenge the honor of the Jewish people, right? So a very interesting thing. It says like this, the Medrash tells us that Hashem says Nikmas b'nei Yisrael, the honor of the Jewish people. Hashem says the honor of the Jewish people, and Moshe says the honor of Hashem. So he says, Amar alay Moshe l'HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, Ribayna Shalaylam, master of the universe, Ilu hayinu areilim, if we were just areilim, meaning people who didn't have a bris, in other words, if we were just an ordinary nation, like all the nations of the world, as we say, or Avdei Avei Dezara, or just idol worshippers, they wouldn't hate us. If we were just, you know, whatever, the people on the streets, the normal people, the people that are just going about their own life, well, they wouldn't hate us. He says, why do they hate us? Because you singled us out. As we say, right, you chose us, you gave us the Torah and mitzvahs, and we are a different nation. We're the Jews. And just because we're the Jews, that's why we're targeted. If we weren't, we wouldn't be targeted. And therefore, he says, Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, that our revenge and your revenge is the same thing, because anybody who stands up against the Jewish people is really standing up against Hashem, because that's the only reason that they're targeting us. So it's also a very powerful thing. We know that that's unfortunately how it is now. It just makes no sense at all. There's absolutely no reason, no logic, no anything for a lot of the things that are happening to us. But that's just the way it is. So we accept it, but what we have to feel is very strong inside ourselves also. Okay, on the next page, the one that has, it looks on some page 2 of your, of that booklet, the Kliyoper. I want to just show you, this one I want to show you inside. It's a very fascinating idea here, because we see a few beautiful things also, how it unfolds. So he says, Maisha Shina V'Amar Lasei Snik, as we said now, that Hashem says, take, avenge the revenge, so to speak, for the Jewish people. And Moshe changed it, and he said to the Jewish people, avenge Hashem, you know, take revenge for God, you know, like, it's Hashem's honor that we have to avenge. Okay, so that's one question. The other thing also, the Kliyoper wants to know, remember we said that this war is very vital in the, so to speak, Moshe Rabbeinu's life. In other words, Moshe Rabbeinu knows, Hashem was very clear, that after this war, he's going to die. Right, that's what we said. So we mentioned that, I don't know if we mentioned this last week, but when it came to Yeshua, he was also told the same thing. There were certain wars that he had to fight, and Hashem said, after you finish, well, it's going to be your time to die. And with Yeshua, he actually delayed. He took a little more time. He was right. I mean, why should he rush his death? What's the point? So he did take more time. But we said, Moshe didn't hesitate, because he wanted the Jewish people to get into the land of Israel. That's where they belonged. And even though he's going to die, and he wanted to follow Hashem's command, he did it, and the words that the Medrash uses, he did it happily, even though he knew that afterwards he's going to die. So the question the Kliyoper wants to know is, how do we know that Moshe Rabbeinu did it happily? He might have done it because he's, you know, devoted to Hashem, but it doesn't mean he did it happily. Like, what gives us that insight to say that he was so willing and excited, so to speak, to do this mission, even though he knew that as soon as he finishes, he's going to die? So the Kliyoper tells us like this. He says, we can see it in the wording. He says, the Midianim, they did two terrible things to us. Okay, so we say, one was, well, actually two terrible things. I think we mentioned this last week, but if you think about it, in a way you can divide it, spiritual and it's both spiritual, but they targeted, so to speak, two parts. So one of them is how we relate to Hashem, which means that they wanted us to sin with idol worship and immorality. And the other thing that they did, okay, yeah, that's right. So that's one negative. The other thing is they caused the death, literally, the physical death of 24,000 people, as we just said, because the plague came. So they really hit us both spiritually and physically. Right, as we said. So Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, take the revenge for my people, because Hashem says, what they did to me, in other words, the fact that they caused you guys to sin and worship idols, I can forgive them for that, so to speak. I can overlook that. But what I can't overlook is the fact that they caused you to die. That I can't overlook. That's what Hashem says. That bothers me more. Okay, so that's very interesting. And that's why Hashem says, avenge the Jewish people, because he's worried about what they did to the Jewish people, that they caused them to die. And then he says, but, so then, Moshe Rabbeinu, let me just see, okay, v'ikra nekama al masha asu liyisrael, ki rabba rasam, then it says, kasher shama Moshe, she'amra le Hashem, achar te'asef el amecha. So when Moshe Rabbeinu heard that Hashem said, afterwards you will be gathered into your people, in other words, you will die, and Moshe Rabbeinu knew that the Jewish people loved him, right? So he said to himself, he thought about it, he says, what's going to happen as soon as I say that? Well, they're going to not be willing to come to war. Nobody's going to go to war if they know that because of this I'm going to die. So he came up with a good idea. He said like this. He said, I know how I'm going to get them. He said that I am going to, oh, he says, oh, so, but how will the Jewish people defy God, right? Because Moshe says, Hashem says, you have to go to war. So even if they don't want to, they'll still have to go. But what the Jewish people might think is they'll say like this, just like Hashem says, I so to speak, will overlook what they did to me, that they caused me to sin, you to sin against me. Well, then the Jewish people might think, oh, we can overlook what they did to us, right? Hashem says, avenge the Jew. So it's okay. The fact that they caused us to die, but we don't want Moshe to die, so they'll delay it. So Moshe Rabbeinu came up with a good plan. So instead of saying that the reason for this war is to take revenge because of what they did to the Jewish people, he says, take revenge because of what they did to Hashem. So now the Jewish people can't overlook Hashem's honor. So Moshe was smart. He changed it because of that. He knew how to get them. And then he knew that they would have no choice and they would have to go. They would feel they have to go, even if Moshe might pass away because of it. Because that they can't overlook. If it's Hashem's honor, they can't. Now the other also interesting thing, I just wanted to see one more thing. Ah, interesting, he says. All right. Oh, and he says that's how we know he did it happily. Because if Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to, he could have just repeated exactly the words of Hashem. And if he would have repeated the words of Hashem, the Jewish people would have delayed a bit. But the fact that he changed it to get the Jewish people to go, right? To encourage them, right? And to give them a hastening to go, that shows us that he was fully into it and he wanted it to happen. So that's a very fascinating thing. Just want to show you one more thing he says. Oh, and this is what we're going to get to. We mentioned last time at the end. The Midianites are one nation that they're fighting against, but there's one more player here, and his name is Bilam. He was the one who came up with the whole ingenious idea. First, he had a whole history. He was the one that actually advised Pharaoh, do you remember, in Egypt? He said, kill the Jewish people in Egypt. He was one of Pharaoh's advisors. Then he was the one that came, and he said, I think he actually was also encouraging Amalek. Then he decided he's going to come and curse the Jewish people, but he couldn't. He ended up blessing them. And when that didn't work, that's when he gave the idea, send out the women, all the beautiful girls, and then the Jewish people will sin. And not only will they sin with those girls from Midian, but I'll tell you what those girls will do. They will also convince the men to serve idols before they can, you know, do anything with them. So we'll get them in every way. So Bilam was pure wicked, had so many ideas to destroy the Jewish people, both spiritually and physically. Now, Bilam doesn't live in Midian. Remember, he was in Moab. So how would he be part of this war? Right? Where would he come in? Because remember, when we read the Pesukim, we read there were five kings of Midian, like five, so to speak, head chieftains, whatever, and that's who were, you know, running the war. But there was also Bilam. How come he was here? So it says an interesting thing. When he heard that his plan had been successful, and the Jewish people had sinned, and they served idols, and 24,000 of them had died. So he decided, well, if my plan was so successful, I have to travel to Midian to get paid. I deserve payment for it, as we know. He better pay me up, because we mentioned when we spoke about Bilam, how greedy he was. A lot of his drive was to amass a tremendous amount of wealth, which we know is something that many people want. Anyways, he went to Midian to get his payment. So Hashem said, actually, that's why this is a perfect time to have the war, because I want to get Bilam while he's there in Midian. And there's no question, and this is actually what happened here, when the Midianites saw the Jewish army coming, what did Bilam do? He encouraged them, and he laughed, and he said, look at this pitiful army, 12,000 men, what can they do? We're going to for sure win. We're a much stronger army. And he encouraged them, and therefore, he also went along with them thinking, and remember we mentioned last week, and he had all this magic that he was able to do, and he thought for sure they'd be successful. And no, he wasn't successful. As we know, he was killed finally here. Here he finally meets his end in this war. So it's quite a fascinating thing that happens here. Yeah, so Bilam is from Lavan, actually, it says. Yeah, I know. we're all related. But it's same now. Yeah, I know.
I wonder what the genealogy
isn't it? It's very interesting. It is scary.
I know from Asav.
But you know, it shows, I think for me, it shows us something interesting, that we all have a choice. You know, we can be given everything, we can be given such incredible, good genes, and then we can choose what we want to do with ourselves. And that's...
The idea of choosing.
It's true. It's true, yeah.
You get from one family, some of the children, wonderful, and some...
Yeah, it's unbelievable, I know. Yeah, okay. Just to... Sure.
Would you say Neskador Hayasham with those buses?
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing. I don't know. It's crazy to think. Well, I can't think what could have happened. It's so funny how now it's, people are, because people are so afraid. You know, it's like such a fear. Because when you see that, you think what could have happened and what could still happen, you know. But yeah, thank God.
It's really worrying because people use a lot of
transport in Israel. It's always been
a very clever idea, like Villa.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, thank God there is a God sometimes.
Do you really think they
would say something is so strange. Something is.
I mean, the same as the text here. They got the wrong business with Lewis's, and then they got the wrong house.
Yeah, so weird.
Really? Yeah,
it's very strange. So there. Oh, Hashem is not sleeping, but yeah, I don't know. It's hard to. It's, yeah.
Something is
bigger is happening.
They looked out of the window in Eretz Yisrael and they saw this.
Really. Yeah,
we're looking for anything, any.
I know. Yeah, we are. But the truth is, it was a miracle, and we should realize that 100%. 100%. I want to just do two more, and then I'm going to go to some other idea, and I want to go into the psukim again, because I want to continue with this, to finish up in a sense the story of what happened. Another beautiful thing we said, that he said Vayishlach Oysam ves Pinchas, he sent them and Pinchas. Now we mentioned Pinchas, and it's important to just highlight why Pinchas was so important in this story. So we said, who is Pinchas? Important to know, who is Pinchas? So Pinchas also plays a role in the original story, because when Zimri, right, from the tribe of Shimon, started to do the sin, and he was leading them in sin, and he was with the princess of Midian, who stood up to kill him? We know it was Pinchas. Pinchas, who is Pinchas? So we know Pinchas is the son of Elazar, the son of Aaron, the grandson of Aaron HaKohen, so he was already had good lineage. That's on his father's side, but the truth is, on his mother's side, he also had lineage, and you know, people laughed at him. So on one side, he was from Yisrael, on the other side, he's from Yosef, it says. And we say a very fascinating thing, that Yisrael served all kinds of idol worship. Yosef, we said, we know the story of Yosef, that when he got to Egypt, he was tempted to sin with Potiphar's wife, and he overcame his inclination, right? So Pinchas was a person who had within him and inherited both in his DNA, but more than that, like the lessons from his grandparents, from his parents, the importance of standing up for what's right and overcoming what you might naturally want to do, right? Sometimes you might have a leaning to one thing, doesn't mean you do it. And just because you want to do it, you don't do it. And now when he saw Zimri sinning, to him it was absolutely beyond. Because his grandfather, Yosef, was in Egypt on his own and was able to withstand Potiphar's wife when he was only 17 years old, and he was all on his own, and it was so difficult for him. And here, this prince of Shimon goes and sins so brazenly. Where does that come in? You know, he had the whole nation to support him not sinning. So to Pinchas, it was very difficult. So we know that Pinchas played a big role. And as we said, Pinchas began the, so to speak, if you want to say, the getting rid of Midian by killing the princess of Midian, right? He killed both Zimri and Cosby. Cosby was the princess. Her father was one of them that was killed now, but she was killed by Pinchas. So as we said, since he started, so Moshe Rabbeinu said, you know what? It's a good idea for him to finish. Let him get the reward, so to speak, and the merit, and it's also like the privilege of finishing what he began. But it's even deeper than that. Moshe Rabbeinu himself, when Zimri was sinning, what did he do? He wasn't sure what to do. Do you remember? It was Pinchas that told him, hey, we're supposed to do something about this. We got to stop this. And then Moshe Rabbeinu said, the one who knows the law should carry out the law. And he killed, right? So we say that over here, Moshe Hashem knew that in a certain sense, Moshe, not a mistake, but it was a little bit of a lack on Moshe's part, that he didn't act quickly. And instead of him, Pinchas acted, right? So Hashem doesn't want to insult Moshe. Moshe is his beloved, the language that Aruch Chaim uses, Yidid, his beloved friend almost, Hashem. You know, Moshe was such a loyal servant of Hashem, such an incredible shepherd of the Jewish people, put up with so much all those years, how many times the Jewish people complained. We know to be a leader is of Jews is the hardest thing. So Hashem did not want to insult Moshe. So what did he do? He had a very smart way of doing it. He gave him a very, like, sort of unclear instruction that there needs to be this war and we need to fight and choose 12,000, you know. And Moshe Rabbeinu was able to, in his own mind, understand that it's not him that's going to be the general, but he can choose somebody else. And he thought in his own mind that if Pinchas started it, let him finish it. So it's like Hashem didn't have to insult Moshe, and Moshe himself was smart enough to understand that he's missing a little bit of merit here. So it's not ideal for him to lead physically this war. He'll obviously stand behind and daven, and Pinchas can do the job, and he will merit the miracle to happen through him, which is what happened. So Pinchas is exactly the right one to take the Jewish people and to fight and to avenge Midian for what they did. Just want to see if there was anything else. I think that was all over here. Okay, but still, and what's beautiful, it's still considered Moshe Rabbeinu's war, which is a very beautiful idea. Okay, what I'd like to do now is going back into the booklet that has the English, you saw the psukim. So I want to show you what happened. We read a lot of the story last time, but we still have a few more psukim to look. So I'll tell you what page it's on. It's on the third page of this booklet. See this one? The third page. So it's Pasuk Zion, verse 7. I'll show you something. Okay, because now let's see what happens. They were going to war. That's where we were up to, right? They were going to go to war. Okay, so what do they do when they go to war? Let's see what happens at the actual war. Sorry, I just want to scroll back again. I wonder if there's a way I can do this. Yeah, here we go. Okay, so it's Pasuk Zion, verse 7. Sorry. Okay. So, Vayitzbu al Midyan. So they mounted an attack against Midyan. Kacha tziva Hashem es Moshe. Daisy, it's the sheet. No, not that one. The one that has English with it. No? Maybe you have another booklet. Yeah, that one. Third page on that one, on the bottom. So he says, and they killed every male. Okay. So this is what they did at the war. They went out and they killed every male. But, and who else did they kill? I think we mentioned they killed the Midianite kings upon their slaying, and it names the kings that they kinged. Al Chalalehem, Es Evi, Ves Rekem, Es Tzur. Tzur is the one we know. Tzur is the father of Cosby, that princess. Imagine, just remember that story. Just again, so amazing how you can see it now. They have no regard for their own lives, just like now, no regard for their own dignity, to the point that this king, he was such an important man, and he sends his own daughter out to commit adultery with the Jewish men, right? It's disgusting. It's such a disgusting thing that they don't even care about their own children, so to speak, and the honor and the dignity of their own children. Anyway, so Tzur is the father. The daughter has already been killed, and now the father is killed. Ve'eschur ve'esreva chameshes malchei Midyan, the five kings of Midyan, and, as he says, Bilam ben Ba'ar, Hargu Bacharev, they killed them with the sword. Now, interesting, Rashi asks, it lists them. So if you count them, you'll see there are five. So why do we have to repeat five? Right? You know, the Torah says, lists all the names, and then it says there were five of them. Why? So he says, Elo lelamedcha sheshavu kulam ba'itza. They're all equal. They were all involved in the conspiracy, in the idea. V'hushvu kulam b'puranus, and therefore they all received the same punishment. And as we mentioned now, Bilam went there to get paid because he was so proud of his idea that it worked. And then when, and as he says, look what he says. He says, if when there were 600,000, you could not overcome them, and now with 12,000, you come to fight. That's what he said to the Jewish people, right? So he was like, we're for sure going to win. And then he finally, thank God, found his downfall, and he was killed here. Now, it says interesting thing. Why it specifies with a sword that they were killed? Obviously, what else do soldiers do in those times? How else do they kill? So he says an interesting thing. The idea is he came against Israel and exchanged his craft for theirs. What does that mean? For they are victorious only with their mouths. We're talking about the Jewish people. We know that our power, that was the blessing that Yitzchak, remember, that he gave to Yaakov, that you have the mouth, you can daven, you can learn. The Jewish people, we know that we work with our mouths, we work with our brains, that's our strength. Our strength is not our fighting. Sometimes we have to resort to it, but that's not really what we're superior in. And he says, he came and adopted their craft to curse them with his mouth. The non-Jews, so to speak, like Esav, right? He's really strong with his sword. But instead of using the sword, what did Bilam do? He tried to use the mouth. So he says, so now the Jewish people do the same thing. So they too come against him by exchanging their craft for the craft of the nations who come with the sword. So now you see the Jewish people, when they need to, they can resort to using the sword also. So you see that if we are able to, we can use our mouth, which is the ideal, which is the best way. Better we shouldn't have to fight, but when we have to fight, we have to fight. But what we know, and this is important, and we see it here also, that we use both. Even when we're fighting, we still don't forget about our strength of our mouth, and we still daven. Okay, now what happens? Then we said they killed all the men. The children of Israel took the Midianite woman, right, Es Neshe Midian, the Es Tapam, and their small children, captive, the Eskol Behemtam and all their beasts and livestock in their possession. The Eskol and then he says, Veskol Arehem Bimashvaisam, Veskol Tiraisam, Sarfu Ba'esh. They set fire to all their residential cities and their castles. So they flattened it. Okay.
So what did they do with the women and children?
That's a very good question.
Were they slaves? Were they converts?
So that's a very good question. So initially, what did they have in mind? In mind, they had that the woman would come, and if they would become part of different families, what a lot of times would happen is some of them would semi-convert, which would mean, semi-converted meant that they would live as maidservants in the home, and they would keep, it's interesting status they would have, they would keep all the negative commandments and not necessarily the positive ones. Or they could fully convert and sometimes marry some of the Jewish men. That could also happen if that's what somebody wanted. And the children more than likely perhaps would have been converted more than likely. But we'll see what happens here because Moshe is not very impressed by this. Let's see what happens. Okay. He doesn't want these women here. Okay. So he says, so they destroyed all their palaces, as he says. And the palaces of all the, the palaces and all the homes, everybody. Go to the next page. Vayikru es kol hashalol. Then they took all the booty, ve'eis hamalkayach, and all the plunder of man and beast. And Rashi says, interesting. This teaches a fascinating thing. What does it mean they took all the booty? So he says that they were virtuous and righteous and were not suspects of theft to appropriate the booty without permission. What this means is that when it says the soldiers took the booty, they didn't take it for themselves. They took it, and you'll see, they bring it to Moshe Rabbeinu. And they pool it all together. It's a fascinating thing. They didn't take anything without Moshe's permission. We'll see. And it's fascinating how they divided it afterwards. Okay, I want to just see. So what are they? It tells us they took different garments and ornaments and movable objects, like pots and pans and all kinds of interesting things. And animals, as we say. And now let's see in Pasuk Yud Beis. Vayavoyu el Moshe, and they brought the captives, right, to Moshe, ve'el Elazar HaKayin, ve'el Adas B'nei Yisrael, right, what do they bring? Es HaShvi, ve'es HaMalkoyach, ve'es HaSholol, el HaMachane, el Arveis Mayav, asher al Yarden Yerechai. So they brought the captives, the plunder, the booty to Moshe and Elazar, to the entire community of Israel in the camp, in the plains of Mayav, at the Jordan, at Yerechai. In other words, they put them all together, right? They didn't take them for themselves. Now, Vayetsu Moshe ve'Elazar HaKoyin. So Moshe and Elazar go out, v'chol nesiyei ha'ed and all the princes of the community, l'krosam to meet them, el michutz l'machana, outside of the camp. Now, why did they rush? It sounds like Moshe and Elazar are like going out. Why didn't they wait till the soldiers came into the camp? He saw that it's an interesting thing. The Israelite youths were going out to grab the spoils. That's what the Gemara tells us. It's a bit interesting, but whatever that means. Anyways, they were stopping them. Okay, now, let's see how Moshe reacts. Fascinating. Moshe became angry with the officers of the army, Sarei ha'alafim, the commanders of thousands, v'sarei ha'meyes, and the commander of hundreds, haba'im mitzvah, who came back from the army, from mitzvah ha'melchama, from the army, from the war, right? Why did he get angry? And Rashi tells us, okay, first of all, who did he get angry at? Fascinating. Did he get angry at the ordinary soldiers? No. He gets angry only at the
leaders.
The leaders. Very interesting. He says, because the truth is, the leaders are the ones held responsible. They're the ones meant to inspire the ordinary people. And in the army, it is the generals. And we know that that's how an army works. Anyways, a soldier follows orders. So it's always the army officials, so to speak, that are held responsible if something wrong is done. And he says, what's he angry about? So Moshe says to them, Hechiyisem kol nekeva? Did you allow all the females to live? Why not? He says, Hein heina hayu livnei Yisrael bidvar bilam limsar ma'al b'Hashem. They are the same ones who were involved with the children of Israel on Bilam's advice to betray Hashem over the incident of Pa'ar. Vatehi ha'magefa ba'adas Hashem. And it resulted in a plague. In other words, these are the same women who came out to entice the men. Because not all of those women were killed. Only the princess, Cosby, was killed. But the other women were able to go back home. And now you're letting them live? These women who came out with the intention to cause the Jewish people to sin. And you might think that it's nothing. It wasn't nothing. It was massive what they did. As if we think about it, they were willing to give up their own dignity, their own... It's unbelievable. For what? Just to cause the Jewish people to sin. I mean, these are evil people. These are wicked, evil people. They went out, they caused the Jewish people to sin. They caused the plague to come. 24,000 Jewish people died, which means that many of the men had sinned. Those are the ones who died. Not only that, but it describes that when the woman came, not only did they entice them to do immorality, but they literally caused them to serve idols. So they really wanted to destroy the fabric of the Jewish people. That's what they were about. Destroying them, destroying their families, everything, right? So Moshe Rabbeinu says, you can let these women live. What are you thinking? And he says, fascinating, look what he says, Magid shahayu makirin aysam. It's the same ones. It shows that they recognize them. Look, he says, Zu hayasha nichshal plainiba. This is the one who let so-and-so astray. They knew the woman. They had recognized them. It was amazing. And they let them live. Moshe says, what are you thinking? So, and he says, Bidvar Bilam, he says, even if you assemble all the multitudes of the world, you will not be able to overcome them. Are you more numerous than the Egyptians who had 600 chosen chariots? That's what Bilam said to Midian. Remember then he said, come, I will advise you. Their God hates immorality, thus enticed them to sin with your woman. And that's what he had said to them. This is the words of Bilam. This was the advice of Bilam. So now Moshe Rabbeinu gives them very clear instruction, which he didn't give at the beginning of the war. And that's what's interesting. So there's a whole question. Why did he get angry if he didn't give them exact instruction originally? Right? He didn't tell them what to do in the war. So it says that the leaders should have understood. They should have had the sensitivity to understand that you don't let these women live. Moshe thought they would for sure understand. He didn't know he needed to give them. So here now he's very clear. And he says, V'ata, hirgu kol zohar bataf, so kill every male child, V'chol isha, and every woman, yoidas ish, who can lie intimately with a man, l'mishkav zohar harayigu, that's who you shall kill. So what does this mean? It's an interesting thing. He says, any woman who's able to. So They say it says like it's over the age of 9. And they were able to tell exactly how old they were. It says it has a whole way. They passed them over the show plate, and the faces of those capable, whatever, to live with a man were turned green. Whatever it was, they had a way to know how old they were. So all of the girls over the age of 9 and women were killed. All of the boys, even the young boys, were killed because they would grow up to be, sorry, terrorists. Sorry, that was what they understood. Moshe Rabbeinu knew this was bad. This was evil people. And that's what it was. So they were all killed. And then he says, a very interesting thing. Do you remember we mentioned, what did they take out to war with them? So this is also fascinating because this is a war against everything that these people represent. These people represent the lowest of immorality, depravity, hatred, you know, no, like just, if you want to say, just to get the Jewish people for the sake of getting them, destroy themselves at the same time. But who cares? As long as we're going to kill you, it's fine. You know, there's no regard for human life, as you can see. No regard for their own daughters, which is crazy. So you can see what kind of people this is. And it says, interesting thing, when they went to war, not only did they choose the most righteous amongst the Jewish people, had to be the 12,000 most righteous, but they also sent, the leader was Pinchas, who was so righteous, but also, as we said, they sent the Arayin, the Ark, according to many opinions. And that's also what gave them that inspiration and that holiness to win the war. Or another opinion, as we said, was the breastplate and that special tzitz, as we mentioned last week, that special headband that the Kohen Gadol wore, which also said, Kodesh LaHashem, holy to God, which is to do with sanctity. And this gave them that special extra power. But over here, they kill all of them. So it's quite incredible. Now we have a very fascinating thing. So this part, I'll just tell you early, it's a very interesting thing the Psukim go through. Here, you know, this one, how do you say it? There's one part of halacha that's fascinating that it's not. We don't really understand why we have to do it, but where does it come from? Many people don't know where it comes from, and I'll tell you what I'm talking about. You know, if let's just say you buy something stainless steel from somewhere and it's been used, you know, we can kasher it. There's a concept of kashering, right? So if something, or even in our own kitchen, if we make a mistake and we have a fleishik frying pan and we cook something milchik in it or whatever, a pot, so there's a way to kasher, you know, you can, so we know what kashering, because that makes sense, because obviously if a utensil or a vessel was used for something not kosher, now we want it to be kosher, we have a process. And it goes through here, because remember they took booty. What did they take? They took some of the pots and pans, some of the utensils, the cutlery, all the nice things from the Midianites. So Moshe Rabbeinu tells them, now I'll tell you what you have to do. Depending on what this utensil is used for, that's how you kasher it. So for example, if something is only used like to mix something cold, well, you just have to rinse it off. Okay, because that's, you know, no cooking. You have to make sure it's clean. There's nothing treif on it. If something is cooked with water, well, then you kasher it with water. But if it's like a frying pan, if it's like on an open fire, well, then you have to kasher it in an open fire. So he goes through all the halachas of kashering. That's where we learn it from here. He tells them, he teaches the Jewish people, because here's the first time that they really are going, they are taking from the non-Jews and actually making it their own. And now they're going to enter the land of Israel and use it in the land of Israel. But there's another halacha that's mentioned here. That's an interesting one. These are the halachas of toiveling. So toiveling is something we don't really understand, but it says that if a utensil was made by a non-Jew, and especially if it was made for a non-Jew, but it's more even just made by a non-Jew, then we have to do what we call toiveling. We know we take it to whether to the ocean, to a mikveh, and we dip it, and only then can we use it, even if it's brand new, right? Even if it's never been used before. And this is also mentioned here. This is where we learned it from this war. Because some of the utensils that they got were new ones, apparently. Seems like never used, brand new, but they were made by the Midianites. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, you want them to be yours? I'll tell you, no problem. You can have them, you can use them. But what you have to do is you have to first table them. So it's quite fascinating. That's what it goes through in the next few psukim. There's one more thing that I want to share from the technical, because I feel bad again. We didn't get, next week we'll get to the beautiful spiritual part, which is actually amazing. But I just want to tell you one more thing. I'll tell you orally how they divided the booty, which is quite fascinating. So it says that they, okay, so as we said, they killed the men, they left the woman and the children alive. They burned down the Midianite cities and they collected the spoils. So what happened now? He says like this. How did they, what did they do with the spoils? So, I just want to see. He says like this. So, firstly, you count the human captives, which means, I guess, the young girls that were left, and the captured cattle. So, to give half to those who participated in the war. So, don't forget, it was only 12,000. There's a lot more Jews than, right? So, a lot of the booty goes specifically to the soldiers. They deserve it. They were the ones who put their life on the line. So, they get half of the spoils. Divided evenly amongst them. Now, what happens with the other half? The other half gets distributed amongst all of the Jewish people. Fascinating. And then, he says, the soldiers were obligated to donate 1/500th of their share to Elazar. Elazar is the high priest. And the rest of the Jewish people had to separate 1/50th of what they received and to give it to the tribe of Levi. Because we know the tribe of Levi works for them in the Mishkan, represents them. So, and why they give much more, because they obviously didn't put their life on the line. All this was a total free benefit for them, so they could give 1/50th. So it's quite an interesting thing. And then he says, only the captives and the livestock were divided. Ah, the, very interesting. The conquered vessels and jewelry remained with the soldiers, and each of the soldiers were permitted to keep what he had taken. So it's quite amazing what happens here in this semblance of the war. Yeah, so it's quite a fascinating thing. This, maybe I'll just tell you quickly, orally, it doesn't matter, we make a copy of what one concept, and next week we'll do another. So it, what does it represent spiritually? So on one level, just on, so it's like this, that when we talk about this war, we're talking about them fighting, as we said, it's obviously not just a physical enemy, it's a spiritual enemy. And they say that Midian is similar to Amalek. Just like Amalek came and fought against the Jewish people, so too Midian. Just like when did Amalek come and start their war? When the Jewish people were going to be receiving the Torah. Mm-hmm. So we were at a very big, you know, milestone, and we were going to reach something very tremendous, a very deep connection to Hashem, where we were going to get the Torah. Now the Jewish people are on their next step in the journey. They've received the Torah, now they're about to enter the land of Israel. Comes the Midianites, as we saw, and tries to defile them and cause them to be impure and cause them to be unholy and cause them to disconnect from Hashem. That was the whole idea, to cause a disconnect. And they send out their girls and the idol worship because they're about to enter the land of Israel. And they want to stop them from entering the land of Israel. So Amalek tries to stop them from receiving the Torah. Midian tries to stop them from entering the land of Israel. And it's explained that right now in history, we are about, already enough, to get to the time of Mashiach. Look, we have the land of Israel. We have to be able to live there properly. We have to have a third Beis HaMikdash. And this is the time when the exiles will be gathered and we will all be able to go. And that's why it's also a time when you find many nations, or one nation, whatever it may be, putting up many, many obstacles to stop us from getting to this, so to speak, next stage of the Jewish people, which is an amazing stage. And what do they try to do? They try to separate us from our separate and block our connection to Hashem. Mm-hmm. So it says specifically, if you can see what two areas, well, there's the area of faith in God and the area of holiness, sanctity. That's what they're attacking. And if you look interesting, because when we talk about the Midianites, Bilam, right, he's the leader that, he was the one that inspired them. If you take his name, Bilam, and Balak, you actually get the name Amalek in there, the last letters. Because Bilam is, and the last two letters are Ayin Mem, and Balak is Lamed Kuf, so it makes Amalek. So you see they're all connected, these enemies. They're just one enemy. What they're trying to do is separate us from our connection to God. Separate us from knowing who we are as a Jewish people, from that pride that we have as a Jewish nation. And of course, separate us from each other. And this is the biggest thing. That's the best tactic they have. That's why we know one of the reasons for the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash was the disunity amongst the Jewish people. Because they know, the nations know, that as soon as they cause disunity, they do, unfortunately, get to have the upper hand. We've seen it time and time again, unfortunately. And they work it well. They know how to manipulate the situation. So when we think about it, when we stop, when we reflect, and we realize that this is the only way to fight them is to strengthen our bond with Hashem. And as we know, the best, it's very interesting, strengthening our bond with Hashem, it's not two bonds, our bond with Hashem and our bond with each other. As a Jew, it's one. If we're not united with each other, we're not united with Hashem. If we're not united with Hashem, we're not united with each other. Because what makes us a Jew is the fact that we have a neshama. So it goes together. And therefore, even if you're the most religious Jew, but if you're not united on, you know, Jew to Jew, forget it. It's worth nothing. And the other way around also, unfortunately, doesn't go. It's not possible. So as soon as we start to reflect and we strengthen our bond with each other and strengthen our bond with Hashem and live lives of holiness and faith, and the beautiful thing, the Nesiv HaShalom, he explains beautifully, he says that it goes hand in hand, the faith and the holiness, and they strengthen each other, and they're there together with Das. Das is this intimate knowledge of godliness, but not knowledge in a way of abstract. He says, where the mind and the heart works together. It can't just be an intellectual pursuit, and it can't just be an emotional pursuit. It has to be both working together. When we do that, and that's really why Moshe Rabbeinu plays a big role, because Moshe, we say, he was the one that gave us the ability and inspired us, and he was the master, in a sense, of both the heart and the mind. He did. He had both. He strengthened our connection to Hashem, he strengthened our connection to each other, and he displayed such a strong loyalty and love and devotion to us, which gives us that we model it. He was ready to put his own life on the line, spiritually even, for the Jewish people. As we know, Hashem says, leave them. Remember when we sinned at the golden calf? Hashem says, forget about the people. I'll make you into your own nation. Moshe says, no. If you destroy them, take me out of your Torah. I have nothing to do with you anymore. So Moshe was the example that we need each other. That as a Jewish nation, we have to be there for each other. We learn from Moshe. He represents this ultimate das, if you want to say this. Ultimate das doesn't mean knowledge in this context. It means a complete in sync, the heart, the mind, with the strongest bond to Hashem. That's what Moshe represents, and he inspires us, teaches us how. But now, you see, the interesting thing is, over the generations, it becomes a little harder, because Hashem wants us to now pick up, it's like a child who, when they're a child, you know, the parent teaches them, tells them, you have to do this, you have to do this, and every single thing is a clear instruction, and the parent holds the child by the hand. As you get older, you're supposed to be a bit more mature, and now you have to grow into it and make your own decisions and do it by yourself. You don't cross the street holding your parents' hand. You have to do it on your own. And this is what Hashem wants from us now. Yes, we have the inspiration, and we have to keep learning, and we have the Moshe Rabbeinu, but nevertheless, it's not as revealed, right? So that's what we have to do. We have to remember it's a challenge, but we can do it. And that's what we have to strengthen. So if we strengthen that and we don't allow the nations to weaken us, both, as we say, our bond to each other, our bond to Hashem, then we will stay strong. There's no question. And then we will have, that's what we're waiting for, the ultimate, for the time of Mashiach and the ultimate peace in the whole world, peace between ourselves, peace in the world, and everything will be clear again. There will be, as we say, Mala Haaretz Deya Es Hashem. The world will be filled with Deya, knowledge, but not knowledge, an understanding, awareness of what is godliness, what is true, what is right, what is good, and what is evil. Now it's all muddled up. And it will be so clear when Mashiach will come. We will have the clarity. This is good and this is bad. And nobody will be confused anymore. We have to lead the way.
So I've just got a question.
Sure.
I mean, you see lots of evidence of